Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the fourth principle. All will be explained. And the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want and thriving in every area of your life are 866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the U.S., you can reach the show by dialing your country code, followed by 760-918-4300. And as always, I'm going to set the table and talk a little bit about this idea of the fourth principle. Those of you who read the weekly tips, and if you don't read the weekly tips, go to supercoach.com. You can sign up at the top of the page. They're free. They're weekly. They're tips. It does what it says on the tin. But this week's tip, I normally don't make the radio show on the same topic as the tip. But this week I wanted to because I just thought that this is a rich territory to explore. And in order to understand what I mean by the fourth principle, in case you're new to the show or you're relatively new to the show, I want to explain what the first three principles are so that you've got a sort of a context for what I mean when I talk about a fourth principle. So in my work, I talk about universal constants, and I talk about them as principles. Like a principle is something that is universal, it is unchanging, it is always there, it's there whether you know it or not, it's there and operational whether you believe in it or not. And the one we most often talk about as an example is gravity, right? We kind of get gravity just is. It's just a force of nature. It is something that you can take into account or not take into account. And it's still there, and it still works exactly the same way. And it's explanatory. A principle is explanatory. You know, the principle of gravity explains why we aren't all floating around space. It explains why some things are heavier than other things. And it's predictive. Like, we know if we let go of something, we can predict with 100% accuracy, or pretty damn near 100% accuracy, that if you hold something in your hand and you let go of it, it's going to fall. If you hold it something else in your hand and you let go of it, it's going to fall. And just whatever you hold in your hand, if you let go of it, it's going to fall. And that's the value of a principle. It's explanatory, it's constant, and it's predictive. And in the world of the human experience, in our world, there are three universal constants. And one of them is mind, that we all have minds. We live in a world that's created via mind. And some people talk about mind as because this isn't like your little mind or my little mind or our brains. This is the mind of God. This is the universal mind. This is the space inside which everything happens. This is the energy of life. It's the life force. It's you know, the physicists talk about the quantum field. It's the A mystic might talk about spirit. A religious person would talk about God. It is the energy and intelligence behind life. It's what makes a living thing alive. It is what makes us alive. It is the basis, the building block, the corest element of life. And so I talk about it as the principle of mind. So that's one principle. That's one constant that is always there. It doesn't matter whether you believe in it or not. It doesn't matter whether it doesn't only apply in some situations. It's predictive in the sense that wherever there is life, there will be life. Life begets life. You know, that if we look closely enough at anything, at any form, we will find the same energy at the smallest level that we can see, and actually beyond what we can see, because we can't even see that energy of life. We can feel it. It's that feeling of aliveness. It's that tingle. It's the twinkle that you sometimes feel behind your eyes. It's the life force. We know it's there by its effects. Well, that's the first principle. Not necessarily the only first principle. You could do them in any order, but that's a principle. The principle of mind. Well, another principle is consciousness. another fundamental truth about life, another fundamental factor, another constant with human beings is that we have the capacity to experience. We have consciousness. We can experience life. And without consciousness, you wouldn't know whether or not there was a radio show, right? Without consciousness, consciousness informs the senses. So without consciousness, it would be a moot point whether or not you could hear or see or feel or taste or touch, because there wouldn't be any awareness of that. There wouldn't be any consciousness of that. But consciousness is universal. It's not just like your consciousness and my consciousness. And it's not like when I go unconscious, that just means my personal consciousness isn't aligned to universal consciousness. It's not that my senses have stopped working. It's that they're just not tuned in. There's no noticing going on. But consciousness itself hasn't gone anywhere. Just because my brain has gone unconscious. Consciousness just is. It's the capacity to experience. And it's the capacity to understand our experience. It's the capacity to actually see, wow, there's this energy behind this experience. There's this life force behind it. There's this intelligence behind it. This intelligent unfolding that makes acorns become oak trees every time and never become a rabbit, right? An acorn has never become a baby rabbit. It always becomes an oak tree if it has the space, the environment in which to thrive. That the oak tree is already programmed into the acorn. There's an intelligence behind the unfolding of this life force. It's built in. That's the mind, our capacity to experience it and to understand it. Well, that's consciousness. Well, the third principle, and the principle that makes everything really interesting, is thought. People think. And this capacity to create via thought, to take this formless energy that could be absolutely anything and bring it into form, well, that's thought. Thought's what lets you have whatever experience you're having of me talking right now, and me have my experience of me talking, and 1,000 other people having 1,000 other experiences. Because what we're actually experiencing is thought. We're experiencing the energy of thought via the gift or capacity of consciousness. And the whole thing only can happen because it's all happening inside the energy of spirit, the energy of mind, the energy of life. And those three things make up everything. Right? I told the joke last week, I think, and it's not that funny a joke, but it makes me smile every time. Never trust an atom. They make up everything. Well, you know, never trust a thought. They make up everything. Right? You know, we live in a world of thought. We live in the feeling of our thinking. But it really looks like we live in a world of form, that we live in our bank balance, we live in our partner's mood, we live in how things are going at our job. But actually, those things only come to us via thought, and we experience them via consciousness, and it's possible, the whole thing is possible because of mind. These are the three principles behind life, the three constants of the human experience. Now, the variability comes in the fact that we can think anything. So we can have any experience imaginable. You can have any experience you think you can have, because thought is what creates the experience. So what do I mean when I talk about a fourth principle? Well, there isn't, as far as I can tell, a fourth principle. I've not seen a fourth constant. I can see that everything that happens can only happen because of the energy of life, because it all comes from the energy of life. I can see that you wouldn't be able to have an experience without consciousness, because there'd be nothing there to experience it. There'd be no screen for the movie to be projected onto. There'd be no senses for the experience to be taken in via. And I can see that there's no variation in experience without thought. But people act as though there's a fourth constant in the human experience, and that constant is me. Not me, Michael. you, John, you, Sandy, you, Fred, right? The constant that we think is a constant is us. Now, in most spiritual traditions, it's called the ego, right? Psychologically, it's usually called your personality or your character. It's you. It's the persona of you. And we think our persona is, or at least should be, a constant, a fourth principle. Well, I'm the kind of person who... Are you shy? I used to genuinely believe I was shy. People never believe me when I say that, because I've always done things in the public eye. But I used to think of myself as incredibly shy. You know, see, it was, I really had to work to get myself to go out in public and to meet people and to do things. And I remember when I started to understand the principles and understand the nature of thought, and the nature of consciousness, and the nature of mind, I thought, well, boy, am I shy? Or do I think that I'm shy? And it started to occur to me that I did do a lot of things that shy people aren't supposed to be able to do. I did go out in public a lot. I do a radio show for tens of thousands of people. I do television. I do big events. I do all this stuff that shy people surely wouldn't do. But in my mind, it was just, oh, well, yeah, well, apparently shy people can do all those things. In other words, the evidence didn't do anything to dent my self-concept, to make me question whether or not I was really shy. And, you know, there's a joke. I actually put it in the tip this week, and I tell it too often. But so a corpse walks into a psychiatrist's office and says, psychiatrist goes, what's the problem? And the guy says, well, I'm a corpse. I'm dead. And, you know, psychiatrist, recognizing a delusional break from reality when he sees one, says to the guy, well, you walked in here. Do corpses walk? And the guy says, well, have you ever seen a zombie movie? Because obviously corpses do walk, because as you say, I walked in here. So the psychiatrist goes, okay. Well, do corpses talk? And the guy gets exasperated and he says, look, I'm talking to you now, aren't I? I mean, obviously corpses talk because I'm talking to you, you know, QED. So the psychiatrist gets an idea, and he says to the guy, do corpses bleed? The guy's not actually thought about this before. And so he thinks about it and he goes, well, no. Corpses don't bleed because we're dead. There's no blood flowing through us anymore. So no, corpses don't bleed. And just at that moment, the psychiatrist grabbed a pin off his desk and just gently pricked the guy's finger. And of course, as would happen, a drop of blood formed on the tip of his finger. And the guy's looking at the drop of blood on his finger. And he's just fascinated by it. And he says, well, I'll be damned. Corpses do bleed. Right? We get so sure that we know who we are. Well, I'm shy. I'm a corpse. I'm brave. I'm a good person. I'm, you know, sad person. I'm a depressed person. I'm an anxious person. We get so sure that state of mind is actually an aspect of our character, is part of our personality, is who we are at core, that we will go to any length in terms of our thinking to not allow evidence to challenge that. And the problem with that is we miss out on the possibilities for our lives, because people like us don't do things like that. People like us don't make changes like that in our lives. People like us don't just up and go up to somebody they've never met and ask them for something or ask them about something. People like us don't just, you know, go out and meet people and talk to them. People like us don't change their work midstream when they've been doing one thing their whole life and suddenly go do something else. Whatever it is, people like us don't do that. People like us do things like this. So for me, because I thought I was shy and no amount of evidence in the world was going to persuade me that I wasn't shy. Well, you know, I was stuck with living a shy person's life, which didn't mean I didn't do anything. It just meant that when I did do stuff, I found it really, really uncomfortable and unpleasant, and I dreaded it. And then, as I say, one day it occurred to me, well, what if I'm not shy? What if that's just a thought about myself that I've thought so often that it seems true to me? And so I had a chance. We got, my wife and I got invited to a Grammys party here in Hollywood. And my first thought was, oh God, no, I'm going to have to socialize with people. And she's like, oh, come on, let's go. And I probably would have gone anyways, because I usually do what my wife tells me. That's the secret of our long and happy marriage. But I would have gone and dreaded it and stayed in the corner and, you know, found a glass of wine and, you know, some other shy person to kind of talk with me about how shy we were in the corner. And for whatever reason on that day, I just thought, well, let me go to the party not as a shy person, because I don't know if I'm shy or not anymore. I mean, I certainly do some things shy people do, and I certainly think some things shy people would think, but I also do things that people who love people would do, and I also think things that people who love people would think. And so I went to the party, and I had a great time, and I wasn't shy at all. And I went up to people and I talked to people, people I didn't even know, people who were famous, people, you know, people like me don't talk to people like them. And I had a lovely time. In fact, to the point where Nina had to come get me and say, hey, let's go home. I'm done. And I was like, oh, I'm having a great time. And I realized that day, oh, I'm not shy. I just think I am. Well, see, that's the thing about what we think is this fourth principle, that we think that our personalities are fixed, our character is set. I remember reading a book years ago by Dr. Martin Seligman, What You Can Change and What You Can't. And it was all about what's fixed in a person and what's programmed into a person. And I remember even when I was reading it thinking, this doesn't pass the sniff test. This doesn't ring true. And the longer I've worked with people, the more time I've been doing this, the more I've seen people just make dramatic changes, not through hard work and effort, but just because they have an epiphany. Somebody's born again and suddenly they're a different person. Somebody has a near-death experience and they're just a different person after than before. They face a health crisis. They lose somebody that they love and suddenly they're a different person than before. They start to behave differently. They start to do things that they never would have done before. I remember when my dad died. My dad was killed about 20 years ago now, more than that, in a car. He was hit by a car crossing the street. And we were really worried about my mom, you know, because they'd been together forever. And you know, my mom wasn't going to be able to make it without my dad. And she kind of thought that and agreed with that. It was probably about 7 months after he died. We got a call from her that she was, I'm going whitewater rafting in Kazakhstan. It was like, we just all went, oh, but we realized, oh, okay. All right. Life goes on. Not in any way dishonoring the memory of my father. Just life goes on. That's the nature of life. It goes on. That's the nature of the energy of life. It flows. The life force finds life. Life begets life. And we can block it and we can sit on top of it and we can stew in our thinking for years and not really go anywhere. But life finds a way through the cracks. Like, you ever seen a post-apocalyptic movie, you know, movie where like it's the end of the world and it's desolation. And there's always one shot of like the cracked, scorched earth with some fresh grass or a flower growing through it. And it's a metaphor for something universal that we all recognize. Life will find a way. And we are sometimes like that scorched earth. We are so fixed in our idea of what isn't possible for us, of what we can't do, of what we can't become, of why we can't fill in blank here. But even with our determination to be right. Really, it is different for us. And we can't change. And we won't wind up having a wonderful life. And we can't have the things we want. And whatever it is, some stuff gets through. Life gets through. We have a moment where something catches us off guard and we smile and we relax a little bit and we feel alive again. We have a moment where a possibility occurs to us that's just so delightful it makes us laugh, sometimes laugh out loud. And if we let it, that crack can get wider and wider and wider, and more life comes through. More and more of this principle of life, this principle of mind comes through. More and more God comes through. More and more spirit comes through. More and more energy comes through. And we are literally, we come back to life, and the dried mud starts falling off our bodies and our, off our psyches, and we're free and we're alive and we're in the infinite creative potential of life again. We get a second chance. We get a fresh start. And that second chance is available no matter how many times you've been offered it. That fresh start is available right now. You're one thought away. You are one insight, one moment, one breakthrough, one crack in the mud in this apparent fourth principle that is you. Not really, but it really seems like it is. From a brand new world, a whole new way of being in the world. That's what's on offer. That's how the principles work together to create our experience. The energy of life, the intelligence behind life coming through, and the free will of our thinking generating all these possibilities, and the just constant possibility of consciousness allowing us to experience it via our senses as if it's really happening. That's all we got. But man, is that more than enough. So I've been talking a lot. It's an occupational hazard. And in the second half of the show, I want to get to your calls. So the numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S., dial 001-760-918-4300. And let me sneak a call in now before the break, and we'll probably carry it over the break. But let's go to New Jersey, and let's speak with Pamela. Pamela, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
I have a strong interest in being a medium. Things come to me in the evenings or when I sleep, or I see things or see people who transition. And I want to practice how to do that and hone that practice. And not quite sure if what I'm doing is coincidental or if it's real sometimes.
The person that I know, and this is a rare thing for me to just jump right in and just suggest something, but it occurs to me. Have you ever watched or listened to Lisa Williams?
No.
Okay, so Lisa Williams, she's an amazing woman. I know her from the most bizarre of reasons, as we, you know, her husband and I used to play golf together. He always had the great line, you know, "Oh, what does your wife do? She talks to dead people." she is absolutely brilliant at mediumship. She's had it's just something that since she was a little kid, she used to just see dead people. She was one of those people who, and just wasn't freaked out by it because she kind of grew up with it. And she's also one of the most successful and well-known mediums in the world. She's launched an academy for mediumship based on my coaching academy. So I created Super Coach Academy. She was coached by one of my coaches. She loved it. She asked for permission to use some of our formats for her mediumship academy. So I don't even know her website, but I guarantee if you type Lisa Williams into Google,
right.
You will be in excellent hands exploring that going forward.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Pamela. That was weird. I remember doing that. I used to do that all the time, just like suggest things to people. I don't do that very much anymore. So listen, you want to get into the second half of the show. You want to talk about this or, in fact, anything to do with creating a wonderful life. 866-254-1579 is the toll-free number to call. Or 760-918-4300 outside the U.S. Check me out online, supercoach.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Michael_Neal or on Facebook at facebook.com/mneal. We're going to be right back after a quick break.
Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
We are back. We were talking about the fourth principle, which in a way is really just saying we were talking about the ego. You know, the ego, you know, it's the personality, it's the character, it's your character, right? Yeah, I love the word character because it's very descriptive, right? We know in a play that a character is just a character. It's a character written for a play. It's not a full human being. It's a character. And yet we talk about our character as if our character should be real and solid and consistent and always the same. That's an interesting notion, that somehow we can perfect our character, or that it's a value to perfect our character. And I'm not saying go out and snort crack. I mean, you know, there's some pretty bad health consequences to that, amongst other things. But I'm saying that if you are devoting a lot of your time and energy to trying to become a certain way, or trying not to be a certain way. I remember a client once coming to me and saying, with great seriousness, do you think I need to be more serious? And I laughed, which was not the response that he was looking for. But I thought it was such a funny idea that somehow the secret to having a wonderful life was pretending to be a certain way. My experience is that what other people call our personality is just the output of a pre-existing system. Like, we've all got our childhood programming. We've all got our habits and you know, ways of thinking that we grew up with and ways of expressing that we grow up with. And we've all got our insecure thoughts that, you know, when we kind of get caught up in them, we behave in a certain way. And some people make jokes to mitigate their discomfort, and some people get angry to mitigate their discomfort, and some people get very quiet to mitigate their discomfort. But that's not who you are. That's just how you've learned to cope with insecure thinking that seems real. When you start to see that all that's ever going on is that we're sitting here in paradise, we're in the Garden of Eden, and we think we're not. And we think that what we're thinking is real and that we got to do something about it. I remember I was talking, I've got a client at the house for an intensive, and I'm going to just go with the assumption that admitting I smoked pot in college once isn't going to be a legal issue for Hay House Radio. So I smoked pot in college once. And if it is a legal issue for Hay House Radio, it's just a story I'm telling for dramatic effect. And I remember being in a friend's dorm room, and I was stoned. And I was, I don't know, I would have been 18, maybe 19. And I was sitting in this really comfy chair. We called it the captain's chair. And it was a, you know, I look back on it now, it was probably a flea infested crap chair because we got it from a dumpster. But at the time it was the captain's chair. It was a really comfy chair. And I was sitting in it, and I was like, I was having a lovely time, but I did not want to leave. And my room was about 10 minutes across campus, and it was a cold night. And, you know, and I just thought, okay, I'm going to have to do it. So I got up and I said goodbye to my friends, and I trudged slowly across campus, and it was cold and it was wet and it was, but I did it. And I got to my dorm room and I got into bed, and I woke up and I was still in the chair. Like, the whole thing had happened in my head. I don't even know whether it happened in 30 seconds or half an hour, but I never left the chair. Well, that's us. We live in heaven. We live in the energy of life. We are of God. We are pure spirit. And we think we're having all these things going on. And that's cool. That's part of the fun of life, is going off on these thought-created fantasies. That's part of the experience of life. That's a great thing that we can do that. But if you start to spend a lot of energy trying to make that dream that you're dreaming while you're sitting in the midst of heaven more like being in heaven, that's kind of a weird thing to do. Right? If I'm already in heaven, why do I want to make my dreams be more heavenly? It's just an interesting notion. Right? Why is, and this is crazy, right? Look, if today's show is just out there and you phoned in for solid business advice to help you in your business, tune in again next week. I'll probably be back. But this is what occurs to me to talk about today is Mayor Baba. I think it was Mayor Baba. It was one of the gurus, Indian gurus who came to the United States in the 1960s. Story is he got off the plane at JFK, I think it was, and he looked around and there were a lot of people that come out to see him. And he said, they live in paradise and they don't even know it. And that's often been interpreted as, wow, we have it so good here in the West and we don't appreciate how good we've got it compared to other people. And I don't know, maybe that's what he meant, but I've always thought what he meant is that here was a guy who noticed that he was in heaven, right? That's what being enlightened is. The lights come on and you look around the room and you go, holy crap, I'm in heaven. This is awesome, right? And he noticed, he knew he was in paradise. And he looked around and he saw all these people who were so desperate to find paradise when they were standing in it. And he could see it. The lights were on for him. He could see that each and every one of us is already enlightened. Is already where we're going to ever be. We're already of the energy of life. We're already home. We just think we're off trudging across the cold, wet campus. We just think we're off, you know, struggling with this and trying to make it through that and trying to improve our personality. When we're already perfect and we have a personality, right? We have our, don't get me wrong. I've got an ego. You've got an ego. We're always going to have egos. Enlightened people have egos. They just don't particularly care what their ego's up to. There's a great story about Sid Banks, who's, you know, he wrote The Enlightened Gardener, and he was a Scottish welder who had an enlightenment experience and taught for the next 30 some odd years until he died in 2009. And, he talks about, you know, just how, you know, how he would get bored talking about it because he would see that everybody was already there. Everybody was already enlightened. And I did an interview once about him. Somebody said, why is it that he sounds kind of bored sometimes and even says sometimes that he's bored? And I said, look, I don't know, but here's what I would guess. Right? I may have even shared this on the show once before, but let's say you wake up and you see that you're in a beautiful garden. Just absolutely beautiful, just the most amazing flowers, and you just feel touched just at looking at the beauty that surrounds you. And somebody else comes up, and they're in the garden with you, obviously, and they go, what you looking at? And you go, oh, look at these flowers. They go, flowers? Can't you see them? My God, they're beautiful. And you start to describe them. And as you describe them, the person starts to see them because, of course, they're right there, but somehow they were so up in their heads that they just didn't really see them. And they go, that was amazing. And they feel at peace, like you feel at peace. They feel just in awe and gratitude at getting to hang out in the garden, just like you feel in awe and gratitude at getting to hang out in the garden. And you think, oh, that was wonderful. And the next day they come back with a couple of other friends and say, hey, can you tell us about the flowers again? And you're like, you mean these flowers that were all in the garden that we're all looking at? And they go, yeah. Yeah, that was great yesterday. Can you tell us about them again, but maybe different? And so you go, oh, okay. Well, yeah, okay. I mean, there's these flowers there. And as you describe them, of course, because they're really there, people kind of get out of their head a bit and they start to notice where they are. And they go, oh my God, I'm in an amazing garden. This is beautiful. Well, after 29 years of describing the flowers to people who are standing in front of them, I can see how you might get a little bit bored with that. Even a little bit frustrated. Not saying he did, not saying he didn't. I just say, it's not weird to me, that idea. We're already where we want to be, but we don't notice. You know, I used to say all the time, you know, wouldn't it be a shame to have a wonderful life and not notice? We spend so much time up in our heads thinking about this and thinking about that, out in the world trying to improve our lot, trying to get better stuff because that's going to make everything better, right? trying to get ahead in our careers because that's the secret to happiness. Trying to get more money because everybody with money is happy. And we miss it. We already have what we're looking for. You've already got a nose. You don't need to go hunting for a new one or for anyone. It's already there. It's a beautiful T.S. Eliot poem. We shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and to know the place for the first time. That's the journey right there. That's the game. Well, we will. We're seekers, right? Certainly, if you listen to these kinds of shows, you're a seeker. You're looking for a better life. And you can have one. You really can. But it doesn't come from getting more stuff. And it doesn't come from getting more money. I'm not against stuff and I'm not against money. Don't get me wrong. It doesn't come from getting a better relationship or getting this or getting that or changing this or giving up that or improving this. It comes from noticing what is already true, what is already present. You already have the whole world. And you're running around looking for, you know, a couple of knickknacks. Because then it'll feel like you've really got something. Now, knickknacks are fine. Right? Every enlightened person that I've ever come across had knickknacks, right? You know, there's some collected Rolls Royces. There's, you know, the Dalai Lama collects watches. You know, everybody's got their thing, right? Because we all have personalities. We all have egos. It's just when that looks important to you, when that looks like the thing that's going to make your life better is to satisfy the ego needs, to satisfy the personality's desires, to satisfy the random preferences that you happen to grow up with. And I've got them too. I'm no different to you, right? Level playing field here. Suddenly, it's like, wow, I'm already whole. I'm already complete. And now if I go play, because look, everyone's got to do something, right? My favorite Zen story, and this is... You know, this is actually a combination of a couple Zen stories. I don't know if any Zen story actually ever happened, but you know, this particular one I know is a combination of a few different Zen stories all wrapped up into one. But the story goes that there was a Zen master, an enlightened man, somebody who'd seen through the illusion of the ego, not gotten rid of their ego, just seen through the illusion of it, that somehow it was a fourth principle, that somehow his personality was solid and real and fixed and who he was and something that he needed to cater to and take into account. And lived in a state of relative peace and well-being, occasional bliss, clarity. Was very effective in his teaching and in what he did because he operated out of that space. And because he was in that space, people would tend to drop into that space around him because that is where we already are. That is our natural space. That's home. Well, he lived in the small house, the edge of the village. And one day he came home early from his teaching and he came across a thief who was ransacking his house. And the thief saw him and grabbed his stuff and started to run. And he shouted after the sheep, "Hey, wait!" And the thief ran faster and faster, and he chased after the thief, and he was waving his shoe. He was barefoot. He had this one shoe, you know, that he was waving, and he was chasing the thief. And finally, the thief just was not a very fit thief, I guess, and kind of, or maybe he was a really fit Zen master. And he just gave up, and he dropped the bag and started to put his hands up and, you know, "Don't hit me with the shoe." And the Zen master handed him the shoe. And the thief is like, what are you doing? And he said, "Well, I noticed that you took, you know, the other shoe, and I didn't want you to be without a pair." And the thief went, "Well, this is different." And the thief started talking to him, and the thief felt a sense of peace that he hadn't felt for a very long time. And he became a student of the Zen master. And he studied with him for many years. And the time came when what was awake in the Zen master was also awake in the thief. when the thief was aware, as aware of the garden that he'd always been in, as the Zen master was, that he was in paradise, that we are all in paradise and we just don't notice. And so the thief was enlightened. And he, you know, was, you know, when you're enlightened, you go. It's like, okay, school's over. You graduated. And you know, because the thief saw a lot of the nature of the human experience and the nature of the paradise that we're already in and the illusion of thought, he had a lot of people who wanted to be his students. And they said to him, you know, what are you going to do? Where are you going to go teach? Can we come and study with you? And he said, oh, no. He said, I think I'm going to go back to being a thief. I said, how can you do that? I thought you were enlightened. How can you do something so illegal and immoral? And he said, well, everybody's got to do something. And to me, that just speaks to the absolute irrelevance of how we do in the world to our experience of the perfection of who we are at a deeper level, at a deeper self. I'm not saying don't be a good person. My experience is that actually, as you are less caught up in your thinking, your natural compassion will come through more and more, and you will just be naturally drawn to do more things that serve others. I'm not saying don't go and create wonderful stuff in your life. Because look, everybody's got to do something. But if it starts to seem like it's worth stressing about, it's worth putting pressure on yourself, it's worth making yourself ill, it's worth, you know, not taking care of your body so that you can go out and get the stuff, so you can go out and achieve the achievement. There's something kind of weird about that. You know, my favorite stories, I haven't told this one for a while, but it's of the millionaire and the fisherman. So millionaire gets really stressed out and, you know, but knows to take time off, knows it's important to take time away. And he goes and he charters a fishing boat in the Caribbean. He's going to go out and take a day. And he's kind of wound up at the beginning of the day, but by the afternoon, he's chilled out. He's had fun. The guy who runs the boat is just great. He's really fun, really nice. You know, he's had a couple beers. He's chilling and they're just relaxing later in the day. The water's quite still. Sun is reflecting off the water. It's just really pretty, really peaceful. And he's feeling great. He's feeling just at ease with himself, at ease with the world. And he says to the fisherman, hey, would you mind if I gave you some advice? He said, I'm actually quite a successful businessman, you know, where I live. And, you know, I'd love to offer you some business advice if you're open to it. And the fisherman goes, well, sure, thank you. And he says, you're really good at this. You could actually, you are, you know, I do these breaks. I need breaks from time to time. And I've chartered fishing boats before. You're really good at this. You could charge more. You could charge, I would pay double what you charge me to come out on your boat. And the fisherman said, oh, well, why would I want to do that? And the businessman goes, what do you mean, why would you want to do that? If you charge double, you would have more money. And if you had more money, then you could use some of the extra money to have a nicer life, and some of the extra money you could use to buy a second boat. Well, why would I want to do that? Now the businessman's kind of getting wound up again. You know, his mellow's been harshed. You know, his buzz has been killed. And he's like, well, if you got a second boat, then you could make twice as much money. Why would I want to do that? Oh, God. Okay. All right. Well, here's why you would want to do that, because if you had twice as much money, you could put some aside and then you could buy a third boat. And eventually you could have a fleet of boats. And with that fleet of boats, you could make a fleet load of money. And then you would, you know, is that clear now? And the fisherman said, well, look, I'm really sorry. I don't mean to be upsetting, but why would I want to do that? And the guy loses. And he says, because once you have a fleet load of money, you can spend your days hanging out on the boat fishing. The guy goes, well, that's what I do now. Now, it's easy for us to see with the fisherman and the millionaire the problem, right? It's easy to see, oh, yeah, well, sure, if I had that kind of life, But you do have that kind of life, because my guess is you wake up in the morning. All right? And if you wake up in the morning, then you're alive. And if you're alive, you get to feel that aliveness whenever you notice it. It's already there. It's that amazing feeling. It's the simple feeling of being. It's nothing special. It's just what it feels like to be alive without a lot on your mind. It's really nice. Sometimes it's even blissful when it gets really quiet. Sometimes it's just kind of peaceful and pleasant. Sometimes it's quite funny. Sometimes you just burst out laughing. Right? That's what we've all got. We live in paradise and we don't even know it. We're having a wonderful life. Joseph Campbell said, you know, people aren't looking for, you know, a more wonderful life. They're looking for a more wonderful experience of being alive. Well, that's already there for the taking. You are already as alive as any human being that's ever lived, because the life force flows through you. Now, if you're not experiencing a lot of it, it's probably just because you get a lot of cruddy, ossified thinking, which we could call an ego or a personality or a programming or whatever it is. And that's already available to you. It's there for the taking. Nothing needs to change. Your circumstances don't need to change for you to feel more of the aliveness that you already are. Your finances don't need to change for you to feel more of the aliveness than that you already have. That's just our birthright, right? We're born with this innate, natural aliveness. That's the joy of life. Enthusiasm. I was talking to a client about this the other day, and they were talking about enthusiasm. They were supposed to give a talk on enthusiasm, and they didn't know when. And of course, the root of enthusiasm in theos, in God. And they were saying, well, I don't know that I'm enthusiastic about anything for a long time. And I said, well, what does being in God have to do with what you're in God about? Right? If I'm resting in spirit, I can rest in spirit with anything. I can be enthusiastic. I don't know how to say it. Entheos. I can be in God in spirit while I'm on the radio. I can be in God and in spirit when I'm with my kids. I can be in God and in spirit when I'm waiting in line at the bank. I can be in God and in spirit while I'm sitting in traffic. I can be in God and in spirit when I'm dealing with a difficult client. I can be in God and in spirit when I'm hanging out listening to the fountain outside my office. I can be enthusiastic about anything. It's got nothing to do with the thing. And I can be not enthusiastic about anything, because in that moment, I'm not noticing that I'm in God. I'm not noticing that I'm in spirit. I'm not noticing the life force flowing through me, filling me with life, allowing me to experience via consciousness the extraordinary range of creative thought that comes through my head on a daily basis. We shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and to know the place for the first time. So why not start at the end? Why not look around right now? And if you look, you might see you're in a beautiful garden surrounded by beautiful flowers. You're already in paradise. You just don't know it. I promise that is as esoteric as I will ever get for an hour. I hope you enjoyed the show. We're going to be back with a brand new one next week. You can listen to more at supercoach.com. Check me out on Facebook, facebook.com/mneil, on Twitter at michael_neil. And if you want to learn to do the kind of coaching that I normally do on the show, as opposed to today, check us out on supercoachacademy.com. Hope you enjoyed the show. Have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.